Hi, everybody, and welcome to this Microsoft Virtual Academy Jumpstart on building hybrid cloud solutions with Microsoft Azure. My name is Keith Mayer. I'm a technical evangelist at Microsoft, and I'm joined by Brian Lewis.
Morning.
Also one of our technical evangelists. And over the next 2 days, we'll be going through an end-to-end tour of Microsoft Azure, PowerShell, and System Center 2012 R2, and how those solutions can be leveraged together to extend your current data center into a hybrid cloud that expands your capacity and provides a lot of capabilities beyond what you could otherwise deliver solely from an on-premises standpoint. But before we get into all that, I'd just like to spend a few minutes for you to get to know each of us a little bit better as we spend our next 2 days together. So, as a technical evangelist, I, like many of you, have been an IT professional for over 20 years now, deploying and designing data center solutions, and over the last several years, also looking at it from a cloud standpoint as well. And in doing so, I've had really the privilege of training and consulting with thousands of IT pros online, in addition to delivering events like our Jumpstart event over the next 2 days. I also have some great resources available online on my blog. You can also find me on Twitter. And be sure, if you're interested in learning more about cloud management, to download one of our new ebooks that I'm a co-author of on cloud management with System Center App Controller. We'll be talking a little bit about App Controller, and Brian will be showing some demos of how App Controller works in a hybrid cloud environment a little bit later this morning. But it's a great ebook to take your knowledge to the next level. Having said that, I'd like to spend just a couple minutes giving Brian a chance to introduce himself as well. Good morning, Brian.
Morning, Keith. Thank you. Yes, so my name is Brian Lewis. I'm an IT pro evangelist. I, just like Keith, have been working in the industry for over 20 years. Been working, as I say on the slide, from ZOS all the way to Apple, right? So, wow. And everything in between. So when we think about that, I got started back in mainframes doing LPARs and virtualization. Back in the early 90s. And so, you know, as I've looked at this infrastructure and gone out, I've seen and played with everything. I actually own everything and play with it and try to figure out what the new future solutions are in the market coming, you know, in the next 5 years and where we're going to be. I blog about that. And that's a big part of our jobs is I spend a lot of time doing online blogging as well as doing events such as this. So that is something that I find a lot of fun, and you're dear to me. So hopefully you guys involve us in that as well, and join us on our blogs. Both Keith and I are active on our blogs, and we'd love to hear comments from you. So please do follow us there.
Great. Well, over the next 2 days, we're going to be talking about hybrid cloud scenarios. And when we think about hybrid cloud, it's really very exciting because it allows us to take our current investment in our on-premises data centers and really leverage that in ways that make sense for our organizations, for the workloads we're running, to leverage the pay-as-you-go, on-demand capabilities of a cloud platform like Microsoft Azure. At the end of the day, the real value that we have is the ability to provide applications that are important to our users, running across a variety of different devices, whether it's phone devices, slate or tablet devices, desktop or notebook devices, running Windows, running iOS, running Android, being able to leverage those business applications across back-end network services that could be hosted on-premises using Windows Server 2012 and Hyper-V, or could be extended and delivered in a cloud on a cloud basis from our Azure platform. Azure, we can really think of as an extension of our data center that leverages a lot of the same core Windows Server and Hyper-V technologies, but through a set of global data centers. And we'll be talking more about that when we get started this morning in learning about Azure in a bit more detail. Azure is also something that we battle test as a cloud platform with our own cloud services. So Bing, Xbox Live, OneDrive, Office 365, they all run on top of the Azure platform as well. And that allows us to collect a lot of key metrics on what's important to scale those types of global applications in the cloud to millions of users, to collect metrics on the performance of those applications, to be able to monitor and manage those applications effectively so that we can use that to not only improve Azure, but also be able to take those capabilities and bring them down into our next releases of Windows Server and Hyper-V to be able to improve the on-premises solution as well. Now, as you're thinking about extending your on-premises environment out with a cloud platform like Azure, one of the important areas is to make sure that you're not forcing yourself into a situation where you're needing to use different management tools and security tools and whatnot. And certainly with our hybrid cloud strategy, that's definitely not the case. For many of the common technologies that you're already familiar with from an on-premises standpoint, like Active Directory for identity and access, like System Center for systems management, Windows Intune for mobile device management, PowerShell for automation, and Visual Studio for team development, all of those tools and technologies can be used to develop, manage, deploy, and secure applications, regardless if they're running on-premises or out in the Azure cloud, giving you the power to take the tools you already know and be able to leverage those in new and interesting ways to grow beyond the capabilities of your on-premises data center. So as we talk about these hybrid cloud scenarios over the next 2 days, we've got 6 modules that we'll be rolling through together. This morning, we'll be starting off looking at an introduction to Microsoft Azure to get a better feel for the capabilities that Azure provides us as IT professionals. And then we'll start deep diving into the infrastructure technologies that Azure provides in the cloud around cloud storage scenarios, around virtual networking. And then tomorrow when we come back, we'll pick up with virtual machines and move forward into monitoring and managing Azure. And finally, we'll finish up with cloud-based identity management, being able to manage identities that are spanning not just on-premises applications, but custom cloud applications or even third-party software as a service applications. So we'll be doing 3 modules together today, 3 modules tomorrow, and then at the end of our modules tomorrow, we'll also point you to some great hands-on lab materials that you can leverage to spin up a free Azure subscription of your own and walk through much of what we demo over the next 6 modules, over the next 2 days together. Walk through that in your own environment, step by step, building out Azure VMs, virtual networks, cloud storage, using the Azure portal, using PowerShell, and using System Center components. So a pretty extensive lab that we'll be directing you to at the end of tomorrow's conclusion of our Active Directory module. Well, let's get started then in our introduction to Microsoft Azure. And in our introductory section, we'll be looking at the Azure platform in a bit more detail to understand the benefits that the global scale of these Azure data centers can provide us. We'll also look at being able to spin up new resources very quickly. Brian will show us some of the self-service provisioning capabilities that we have in the Azure portal and PowerShell and System Center. And then we'll pull back a little bit and think about, well, how do we plan our migration of certain applications over to Azure? We'll look at cost estimating and see some of the tools that we make available through the Azure portal. And we'll talk about some common patterns and scenarios for taking existing applications that make sense for a lot of organizations and looking at ways in which we can marry those up to Microsoft Azure in a hybrid cloud manner to get the best initial bang for our buck, essentially, from our movement, our transition over to a more cloud-oriented approach. So when we think about that first topic then around global scale, when I talk with IT pros, they really get their socks knocked off on how far we've taken the global scalability of Azure. You see, Azure is not just one big data center out there in the world. It's actually a collection of global data centers that are all tied together through very high-speed, redundant network backbones, all tied together through resilient connections to the internet. And we started off the year with 10 Azure data centers. We have four over in the U.S. in our East Coast, West Coast, North and South, 2 in Europe, in Northern and Eastern Europe, two over in Japan, and two in the Asia and Southeast Asia area. And then quite recently, we added to that with some additional data centers as well. We brought up two new data centers in China, in Greater China, and we're actually the first global cloud provider to have a presence in Greater China, as well as throughout the rest of the world from an Azure standpoint. And then we've also announced plans in the next few months to deploy two new data centers in Australia and a new data center in Brazil as well. By the end of the calendar year, we expect to have 16 total data centers online. Each of these Azure data centers are huge. They have hundreds of thousands of physical servers operating within these Azure data centers. So keep in mind, we're not talking about virtual machines. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of physical servers running Windows Server and Hyper-V technologies as the virtualization layer on the Azure cloud, arguably making Hyper-V one of the world's most widely deployed virtualization technologies out there based on how it's scaled globally through our Azure data centers. On top of these data centers, though, we also have a set of additional periphery data centers located throughout the world that act as caching endpoints for taking advantage of our caching services for caching static web data and whatnot, other application data that's static, close to the users that will be accessing that through our content distribution network, our CDN network capabilities that are in Azure. So, lots of data centers, lots of growth, giving you the potential in a hybrid cloud manner to easily extend your reach from where your current on-premises data center is today to users in over 90 countries and territories worldwide without having to build your own physical data centers yourself and having to expend that additional cost and time involved in spinning up those new data centers. Now, as you can imagine, we're seeing tremendous growth and interest in our Azure platform. We have over 1,000 new customers spinning up workloads on Azure each and every day on average. And in order to be able to accommodate that rapid growth of capacity in our data centers that's needed, our Global Foundation Services data center team has come up with some interesting ways to think about physical data center deployments. You see, we no longer look to deploy data centers physically by racking and stacking individual servers or even entire racks of servers. Instead, our data center team has developed a very modular approach called IT packs, IT pre-assembled components, that combine several racks of equipment, all pre-wired with cooling and networking capabilities integrated already, so that when we have to expand our capacity, we simply deploy one of these new IT packs, one or more, into our existing data centers and connect up a couple redundant power connections to an IT pack unit, a couple redundant network connections, and redundant cooling, flip a big switch, and within a few minutes we have thousands of new servers that just came online without having to rack and stack and manage individual servers. So if you're interested in learning more about our server and data center design methodologies, you can certainly go out to the links that we have on our slide to see more information on those. And it's interesting to note that our Global Foundation Services team has also recently open sourced the design of our server architectures that we use in Azure so that you can leverage a lot of these same design principles even if you're architecting or expanding your own on-premises data centers going forward. It's helped us dramatically reduce the cost of running Azure data centers. Our power utilization efficiency ratio, our PUE ratio, is down as low as 1.2 in these Azure data centers, which is unheard of in traditional on-premises data centers that are typically hovering around the 3.0 to 4.0 range in a lot of cases from a power utilization efficiency standpoint. So we use that in Azure to reduce our costs and pass that savings on to our customers. You can use that same set of design principles in your own on-premises data centers to reduce your physical costs for your data centers as well. Well, as we think about these global data centers that Azure provides us to quickly extend the reach of our applications and services, it makes sense to think about how Azure presents that global data center capacity to us. You see, we've aligned to a set of industry standard cloud computing models that have been developed and defined and standardized in our industry by the National Institute of Standards and Technologies. So when we think about those cloud computing models, the NIST has defined three common models for cloud computing: infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, and software as a service. And what you commonly find with cloud computing platforms out there is that many cloud computing platforms orient themselves to only one of these cloud models. So there's some great cloud computing platforms that focus on infrastructure as a service, others that focus on platform as a service, still others that focus on software as a service. But with Azure, you don't have to pick and choose your cloud model capabilities. Azure provides the ability to leverage and deploy applications and resources across all three models. It's really the only solution that I'm aware of as a publicly available global cloud platform that allows you to start off perhaps with infrastructure as a service, giving you the ability to migrate your existing apps and host them inside a set of Azure virtual machines running on a virtual network up in Azure. But then, as those applications continue to grow and mature and be enhanced by your development teams, you're not stuck just with running VMs on Azure. You can take advantage of our platform capabilities around platform as a service to quickly allow your development teams to enhance the capabilities of your existing applications or develop and deploy new applications by taking advantage of the service-oriented application building blocks that platform as a service provides, so that your developers aren't having to worry about writing lots of the code involved in the deep plumbing of your applications. Instead, they can take these building blocks like identity management and cloud services, or mobile services for mobile applications, or websites for web-based applications, and leverage that pre-built plumbing so that their code really is focusing the time they spend on coding on the unique business process angle that is important to your organization and unique to the applications that are written in your organization. Beyond that, to gain even quicker deployment capabilities of new web-based applications, we also offer a software as a service model for publishing new pre-packaged web applications through Azure Websites. So Azure Websites is kind of interesting because Azure Websites actually extends across our platform and software as a service models to provide you with the ability on the platform side to build and quickly publish your own custom web applications, or on the software as a service side to choose from one of our prepackaged templates for quickly building a new blog site, an e-commerce site, a website for marketing campaigns, or your landing page for your organization, and have those spun up very quickly. So you've got the capabilities of leveraging application scenarios across all three of these models. And the important thing about Azure is because Azure provides all three models, it's not choosing one or the other on an application by application basis, but providing you with the ability to leverage them together. We see lots of organizations that start migrating their existing apps to infrastructure as a service, moving existing VMs up to virtual networks in Azure, and then begin thinking about new ways of enhancing those applications or building new application logic around those existing applications by leveraging our platform and software as a service capability. So a real differentiator when you start thinking about the cloud. Because what Azure allows you to do is be able to leverage that choice of how much customization you'd like against speed of deployment and ease of deployment, how agile your organization needs to be on deploying new applications. Because virtual machines in Azure allow you very deep levels of customization. The virtual machine capability that you have on Azure allows you to completely customize what you run inside those virtual machines, from the operating system to applications to runtimes to security models and group policies, just like you would for virtual machines that are running in your on-premises data center. But as you start transitioning for enhanced applications or new applications over to platform as a service or software as a service and start thinking about ways of leveraging cloud services or mobile services or websites, those are pre-packaging some of those underlying components for operating system and API runtimes into very easy to deploy units for your application. It doesn't give you the same degree of customization because they are pre-packaged runtime environments, but it gives you the ability to have your development teams write and deploy and test their code very quickly without having to worry about as much build out and configuration work on the virtual machine side as they would if they were deploying everything through IaaS only. So the important story here is Azure is all about choice when it comes to the cloud. You can decide how Azure makes sense for augmenting your on-premises data center for the workloads that matter most, and later in this module we'll talk about some of those key scenarios. And you can decide within Azure how much customization versus ease of deployment and speed of deployment you need on an application-by-application scenario, and even within various components inside of a single application, being able to leverage IaaS, PaaS, and software as a service components together to meet the needs of your organization in a way that really empowers you. So we're not trying to shove everything into a public cloud that only runs virtual machines, for instance. We understand that in complex enterprise environments like those you support, you need that level of choice in order to really be able to choose and deploy effective solutions in the cloud going forward. Well, we've talked a little bit about what Azure offers across these various stacks. Let's see how it impacts us as IT professionals as we think about the degree of customization versus ease of deployment. Obviously, if we're deploying everything on premises in our own data center, as IT pros, well, we're responsible for everything from the hardware for our storage and networking and servers, all the way up to virtual machines and what runs inside those virtual machines. In fact, what we've found is that for many organizations, when they're deploying new applications that require them to scale out new capacity in their data center, 70%, as much as 70% of their time focuses on these lower layers of building out and provisioning new storage, building out new VLANs or other networking architectures for those new applications or servers or whatnot, and then building out and configuring their servers, their hypervisor hosts, and their virtual machines. So the time involved in an on-premises world for deploying new applications where more capacity is needed in the data center, as much as 70% of that time spent in deploying new solutions is focused on kind of the bottom layers that are more tactical inside of an organization and less strategic, less about what the organization really needs to run as an application. As we think about how this transitions over to a cloud model, well, if we think about Azure and the ability to simply lift and shift those virtual machines over to virtual machines that are running in Azure, one of the key advantages we provide is right away the hardware support is offloaded to the cloud provider. In our case, our Azure data center team manages our storage hardware, our networking hardware, the compute hardware, the server hardware that's used for virtualizing virtual machines. You as an IT pro still have complete control on demand of how you provision that hardware, how much storage you allocate, how you set up networking and subnets and IP addresses, how you build out your virtual machines, and for what runs inside those virtual machines, from the operating system, through applications, through security and data and access, you're in control still of all of that. So really, when we start thinking about infrastructure as a service, we gain a lot of time savings and cost savings by allowing someone else to manage those more tactical hardware aspects of our environment. And then once our applications are migrated to Azure and we begin enhancing or extending those applications by leveraging platform as a service. Well, as we said a little earlier, platform as a service delivers more of a prepackaged runtime environment so that not just the hardware, but the generic pieces that we'd otherwise have to maintain around the operating system, around the API runtimes for our applications and whatnot are provided by our Azure team as well. And as an IT pro, you're focused really on the strategic pieces of deploying and monitoring the applications that impact your business, along with the data and security models around the data that those applications are generating and managing. And then moving over to software as a service, well, software as a service is all about prepackaged applications that can be deployed extremely quickly in the cloud. So you're all the way up to the application layer, you're giving that management over to the cloud provider to be able to scale and manage those applications on very large capacities. And at the same time, as an IT pro, you're still responsible, you still have complete control over your security model, over the data that's stored and managed by those applications in ways that make sense for your organization. So you can choose, as an IT pro, where to invest your time. Those blue areas that we have are the IT pro areas of investment, and as you adopt more and more cloud technologies as part of your hybrid cloud strategy, you'll find that your time is being better and better spent on the more strategic, more business-focused aspects of deploying new workloads for your organization. Well, so today, the rest of today and tomorrow, we're going to start off looking at infrastructure as a service. We're going to focus on each of these layers, one module at a time: storage, networking, compute, virtual machines, and then all the way up into configuring those virtual machines, monitoring them, managing them, and automating them as we go along. But before we jump into all those specifics, I just wanted to give Brian an opportunity to show us how easy it is to really get started with Azure from a self-service provisioning standpoint and walk through the various ways that we can manage and interact with Azure from a management portal standpoint, from a PowerShell standpoint, from a System Center standpoint. Brian?
Great. Thanks, Keith. So what I want to start with is the Azure the website, which is just www.azure.com. And when we go there, we have the main Azure screen. So in Azure, I can go and sign up for a free trial right here on the bottom left. If I go up to the right and hit portal, that takes me to my normal portal that we use today. I do want to take a second to mention we do have another portal. If I scroll down on the page, there is a preview portal that we can take a look at. And I'll just show you that real quickly, which is the Microsoft Azure preview portal lets me do a few things today. It's not fully built out. And when we do previews, it's our beta version in Azure we call preview. So any feature that you see inside Azure where we've labeled it a preview, that's actually a beta. It's something that's not full production yet. In this portal that we have as a preview, I can go and I can see what all the health of Microsoft Azure currently is. So I can see that everything's green right now, which is great for our demos today. So everything should work for us. The other aspects are if I want to create something new, I can click on new, and right now I can create a website, a SQL database, a team project, a MySQL database, or a website plus SQL. That's what's in there today. I can't create VMs and do infrastructure as a service today from here. So that's something we're going to have to switch over to our current portal for. Other things that I might point out here, some of the nice pieces are it tells me about billing. Here I'm running a free trial. The account I'll be demoing out of today will be the exact same accounts that if you sign up for a free trial and play with Azure and learn all about it, that's exactly what you'll be using is this free trial account. Right now, I started with $200. I currently have $111 left. I started this 16 days ago because it's a 30-day trial. I have 14 days left. And I have a virtual machine or a website up and running here. So in the preview portal, I can go look at that website. I can add features to it. I can see my stats on how many people have hit this site, how many have hit it today, how many errors, all types of analytics, including starting, stopping. So that's what's in there today from a preview page. I just wanted to mention that. Now let's go on to the regular portal. Here, I've got our current production portal. When you first log in, there's the all items, which shows everything here. We're going to focus on virtual machines, so I've clicked on the virtual machine tab on the left. Now, in this virtual machine tab, I have right now these four virtual machines up and running. But let's just see real quickly how we can create a VM and how fast we can get something up and working here. So I'm going to hit new on this section here, and I'm going to do what's called a quick create. We'll go through this portal much more in depth as we go out throughout today and tomorrow. But today what we're going to just, or for this section, we just want to create a really quick VM, quick and dirty, and get it up and running. So I'll call this BGL Demo 4. And it's a unique name. It checked it because it's bgldemo4.cloudapp.net. Everybody shares this cloudapp.net URL, which is a public DNS name that is available on the internet. So it's got to be a unique name for your DNS section here. You also have to pick an image. I'm going to pick Windows Server 2012 R2 Data Center, but I could pick Ubuntu, OpenLogic, SQL Server. There's a bunch of others, and we'll look at those in depth later. Another thing I pick here is the size. I have different sizes to choose from sharing a core to a dedicated core, up to, in this case, 8 cores and 56 gig of RAM. So for this one, I'm just going to choose a single core with 1.75 gig of RAM, and then I give it a username. I'm going to use the name Brian, and I set a password. These passwords do have to be complex. And then I choose where I want this to create. So do I want it to go into the Eastern U.S., the Western U.S., Northern Europe, Western Europe, somewhere in Asia, or in Brazil, for example, which is a preview right now. Once I hit Create, it starts to create this. So let's hit that. And we see that on my main portal now, it says Starting Provisioning. So in about the next 3 minutes, I should have a server here. While this provisions, I just want to mention there are a few things with that. It wanted a username. You can't use the word administrator or admin in that spot. Another thing that happens is you have to choose a complex password, and it's going to check for complex passwords. And beyond that, it will make sure that it isn't pass at word, 01 or some of the standard passwords we've used in some of our curriculum. Just the story behind that is kind of interesting, so I'll mention that, which is we had VMs. I was running a VM. I was building a classroom environment, and I had used the standard Microsoft password, capital P, @SSW0RD. I was in that, and then all of a sudden the administrator logged in and logged me out of my admin session, which got me thinking, what's going on here? Oh, someone just logged in as me. Somebody hacked my account. So I quickly logged back in as the administrator and took it away from them. And then I froze, and I couldn't remember, how do I reset the admin password? In an RDP session, it's Control-Alt-Insert, but I was thinking Control-Alt-Delete, which would do my local machine. So I brought up a DOS prompt, and I said, all right, what's the command prompt to do it? It is, I remember now, net space user space administrator space the new password you want to set. At that time, I couldn't remember. I got logged out again, and the hacker knew how to do it because I tried to log in again, and he had locked me out of my account, which he didn't gain much. I deleted my machine and started over and used a complex password at that point. But that's why we have some of these security pieces in here, is that so you can't have your account taken over. There's a program called TS Grinder that hackers would use to look for that. We do a bunch of things, including dynamic ports. We don't use the standard administrator account, and we require complex passwords. You can't use password. And the new best password out there today, do you know what that is?
No, I don't.
12345 is now the new high security password that everybody uses. Those passwords aren't accepted. And use a complex password on everything, please. Another thing we can do here is we can do multi-factor authentication to make sure people can't log into your Azure account. But as the VM still is creating here, what's basically happening in the provisioning process, it's going through the out-of-box deployment and running through scripts and creating that VM. I'm going to remote control a different VM just to show you what we'll get when that's done. So I'm going to grab, for example, this lab 001 that I've created. I hit connect. It downloads an RDP file. So if I hit open on this RDP file, it will basically start a RDP session with those addresses and that information, which I already have started. So if I connect up to Lab 01, I get access to a machine. We'll soon have access to the one I just created, but I wanted to show you what you get inside these VMs, because this is the cool stuff of Azure Infrastructure as a Service. I've created a VM in like 5 minutes, I have a nice well-connected to the internet VM. And what do I mean by well-connected? So not only do I have Server 2012 R2 running here, but if I go to the web browser, I hit the search engine, my favorite. It's called Bing. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend taking a look at it. It's a great search engine. So I'm going to do a speed test search. I'll bring up some speed test websites. And if I bring up just a couple of them here, open them in new tabs, I can begin a test. Now, what's really nice about this is it's connected well to the internet. Keith had mentioned before about how our networks not only are well connected throughout the world and encrypted between them, I might add, but they're well connected to the internet as well. And so as the speed test runs, what we're seeing here is my download speed right now is a little bit over 400 megabits per second. I have never had a machine until I started playing with Azure that well connected to the internet. Well connected not only for download speeds, but for upload speeds as well. And so one of the interesting things as I first started realizing that I could go test this and see and have fun with that is quite often I would get numbers like you see here right now. It's only at 80 megabits per second in speeds. Generally, that's because I'm killing their connection to the internet on the speed test site. So here we have 433 down and 95 up. Well, that's not normal. That might have been their site. So let's try one here on Megapath's speed test site. What I should see here is numbers much more beyond that, not only on the download, but on the upload. So your VMs that you get to go play with for free and learn not only about Windows Server, but about Azure as well, your VMs are connected to the internet, and we do throttle, but they're well connected. So here we should have connections well over, this one's on the upload speed over 650, up over 700 megabits per second at this point. Just phenomenal speeds.
Wow.
So a lot of fun to play with. And if you're setting up a website, it's going to handle your traffic. And if not, we'll spin up more and you'll get that aggregated bandwidth. So just fantastic stuff on these VMs. A lot of fun to play with for people in interested in infrastructure. So that's what we'll go with for right now. We'll come back and we'll take a look at that VM as it's provisioned in just a few minutes. One last thing I guess I will show, that it is done creating that VM. It is here and ready for me to remote control and start to use. And so that was the simple, fast creation of a VM and fastest way to get started and throw up a server. But we'll look at this more in depth in a little bit. And with this, I'll hand it back to you, Keith.
Thanks, Brian. Yeah, that's awesome. So you can see how easy it is using the Azure Management Portal to quickly spin up new workloads, you know, 7 clicks and an OK button, 7 fields and an OK button click, and 3 more minutes later, you've got a new VM up and running. I don't think I've seen an on-premises data center environment that's quite that easy and agile for spinning up new workloads. In addition to spinning up new workloads through the Azure Management Portal, though, we also have other opportunities, other tooling that we can use to be able to make our environment even more agile in being able to provision and manage those cloud-based application workloads. For instance, if you're familiar already with PowerShell for managing your servers on-premises, we also make available a free Azure PowerShell module that you can download from our Azure download page at azure.com and install into your PowerShell environment. Now, if you're not a PowerShell user, if you're perhaps maybe you have IT or developers that are running Linux or Mac OS X, we also have a completely free cross-platform command line interface that's based on Node.js. So you can really pick and choose which direction to go. Both offer the opportunity to script out pretty complex provisioning operations around building virtual networks and storage and multiple VMs and whatnot. Brian, could you show us a little bit about using PowerShell to spin up new workloads on
yes.
Azure?
So first, let's start at the portal here again. If I want to look at these VMs and spin up VMs, I can certainly do it in the web-based portal. But the command line lets me not only do what the portal can do, I can do more there. Mm. There are other APIs as well, so if I'm a programmer and wish to write directly to manage this environment, I can do that as well.
Oh.
But if I want to go grab the commands to use PowerShell, I would go to the Azure website, so www.azure.com. From that site, that main page, I hit the Downloads section. Under Downloads, I would basically hit the install on the Windows PowerShell. And then it starts the Windows PowerShell install. It basically will take maybe 2-3 minutes to basically next finish install those pieces. Once they're there, I can start to use the PowerShell command line to connect to Azure. And we'll go through that in a second. The other aspect is, if I want to use the Azure command line interface, which Keith mentioned, that's cross-platform. It certainly runs on Windows. It also runs on Mac. It runs on Linux. And so I can install that here by clicking on the Windows install, Mac install, Linux install. And so we'll take a look at both of these command line options. So to start, let's go over to the PowerShell window here. In PowerShell, the first thing I'm going to do after I do the install of the command line tools is I have to do an add Azure account. So when I do an add Azure account, it prompts me for credentials. And here's the test site or the free website that I set up.
So the same credentials that you used for logging into the portal.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The same credentials I use for my Azure account. And I can have multiple Azure accounts tied to different command prompts. Let's get this logged in here. So it logs me in, and then it ties my account to Azure. And the way it does that is it uses a certificate. It downloads a certificate, it installs that certificate into my account here, and now I'm connected. The thing to be careful of is if you download that certificate and store it on your hard drive, that is the keys to the kingdom. If someone else gets a hold of that, they can install that to their command prompt and start to manage your environment. So you want to be very careful with that certificate. Here, I now have a connection to that. So if I want to get a list of my VMs, I do a get Azure VM. And what will happen is it will go out to Azure and it will list all my virtual machines. So if we see these, we have the 5 servers, the one I just created a minute ago, and then the servers that were already there. And if we switch over to the website, we see that's the exact same 5 servers I have listed here. So I'm connected. I can list those. I can do a quick create. I can do add storage, deleting virtual machines, any of those types of commands. And one of the nice things of PowerShell as a scripting language, it's not just scripting. When I do commands, the error codes it returns are not just succeeded or failed or true and false. I can return all types of error codes. It's a fully object-oriented scripting language, which is the benefit of PowerShell. In addition to, it's our go-to forward way to manage Windows Server. And so as components get added to Windows Server, they'll have a PowerShell command line to manage them. If they have a graphical environment, that graphical environment runs PowerShell on the back end. And the reason why this is so cool for us techs is if you've worked in the industry for a long time, you've run into issues where you run a command prompt and it does something to manage a server or a service, and it works a little bit different than the GUI. And sometimes there's a bug in one of them, and the company might say, well, you know, the workaround is to use this, and they don't fix it. The really nice thing is if I do it locally on a machine from a command prompt, if I do it remotely from a command prompt, if I do it locally from a GUI or remotely from a GUI, it all runs through the same process, because sometimes if it's done remotely versus local, you get different results as well. Not with PowerShell. PowerShell runs through the exact same mechanism no matter what, and so we get the same results. So it's a really great tool for using it. As far as some of the graphical environments even, I hit next, and before I hit finish, I can say, show me my PowerShell, which then I can cut and paste out of PowerShell to get the idea of how I need to if I want to install Active Directory, for example, I can do that. And so, therefore, I don't have to go look it up on the blogs. I can see from the graphical environment what the commands are to do that, and then I can put that in some type of script I need to do. So anyway, PowerShell is great, but I also like the CLI. And so let's switch over and take a look at the CLI. The CLI can run in PowerShell. I put it in just a DOS command prompt because it runs in a command prompt as well. And the way to look at what is there is just the word Azure. This is my favorite thing for 2 reasons. One is I type in Azure, and it tells me all of the commands that I am allowed to do. So if I'm looking for what to do next, that's part of it. The other reason I love this is because I'm from the old bulletin board days, and it spells out Azure at the top in the old bulletin board fashion. Just nostalgic. But so let's say I want to do an Azure something to the virtual machines like I just did in PowerShell. I want to list out my VMs. Oh, okay, so the help says it's Azure, the command is VM, so I type in Azure space VM. I hit enter. Oh, that isn't the command I was looking for. It gives me all the other options I get to do. So I actually wanted to list them. So if we look at here, we have Azure, oh, that's image list. I don't want to do an image list. I just want to do an Azure VM list. Okay, so I'm going to type in Azure VM list this time. And so let's go back down here, Azure VM list. It goes and it connects. I already connected up the DOS environment. So Azure, the CLI has to be connected to your environment differently than the PowerShell. If I connected PowerShell to it, that doesn't connect up my CLI. And they can be connected to two different environments at the same time, too. So if you wanted to do scripting from different ones, you'll have to do that. Further, I can hook these up to multiple environments to one command line interface, and then you choose which one you want to work against at that point in time. But here we've listed the five VMs again. And so now I have my five VMs, and I can go and work against these, adding, deleting, or managing them in whichever fashion I wish. So the same five VMs we saw in the console, as well as the same five VMs we saw in PowerShell.
Great, awesome. And so using PowerShell or the cross-platform command line interface, it gives us a lot of opportunity to manage our resources up in Azure in an automated, scripted fashion. But in terms of PowerShell, remember that this is the same PowerShell that many of you may be using for managing your Windows Server workloads in your on-premises environment. And that opens up the door for scripts that are true hybrid cloud scripts. You may have application scenarios where some components of that application are being deployed on-premises, other components are being deployed up in Azure as virtual machines or cloud services or whatnot. You can have one PowerShell script that deploys the whole environment because PowerShell is universal across on-premises and Azure. And remember, PowerShell is more than just about provisioning the shell of your resources. Because once those virtual machines, for instance, are provisioned, you can use PowerShell remoting from within the same script to go inside those VMs and be able to configure the workload, the operating system and application settings and whatnot, all from within that same script, giving you a universal end-to-end tool. Now, if you're not necessarily a scripting person, or if you want to expose an even easier hybrid cloud self-service orientation to your users, perhaps your development teams or your application owners within your IT department, for instance, System Center 2012 R2 also offers the opportunity to take an existing set of tools that you may already be running on premises as part of System Center and connect those up in a hybrid cloud manner as well. So many of you from our other jumpstarts are probably familiar with certain components of System Center 2012 R2 around Virtual Machine Manager, for being able to manage across multiple virtualization hosts, Hyper-V, VMware, Citrix Xen server hosts in your on-premises data center environment, effectively allowing you to build a private cloud. And then our other tooling within System Center, like Operations Manager for monitoring your cloud fabric, your private cloud fabric and application workloads. Service Manager for being able to provide help desk ticketing and respond to user requests in an orchestrated fashion. Orchestrator for automating your data center environment. And Data Protection Manager for backing up and recovering, when needed, files, folders, or entire virtual machines and hosts. Well, one of the components of System Center 2012 R2 that you may not have yet done much with is the App Controller component. App Controller is a key component as part of our hybrid cloud strategy because what it allows is a single web-based self-service user interface that can be exposed to your existing Active Directory users, your development teams, your application owners, for having a consistent interface to provision and manage virtual machines that are running in your private cloud through VMM, as well as running up in Azure through the Microsoft Azure Fabric. So Brian, do you want to show us a little bit about App Controller and how that can help us in this hybrid cloud world?
Yes, sounds great. So great. What we've built out here, and what you'll build out if you're going to do the labs at the end of the event tomorrow, the labs, you'll build up four servers. You'll build out an Active Directory controller. this Active Directory controller is the authentication and authorization piece that makes your domain. You'll build out a Contoso domain. Surprise, surprise. So from that, I'll have a domain, a database. So we'll run in SQL here. And then I have an app controller server running. And that's the server we're going to play with right now, is we're going to use that app controller to go manage these servers in here, which it's interesting. We're using servers inside this environment to manage this environment. But that's what we will build up in the lab, if you choose to do that lab. And so what I would do is connect up to that server, which I've already done, and I have my RDP session to that server. And then from App Controller is a web-based interface that allows me access to these services. So the first thing I have to do to start to manage Azure with App Controller is I have to connect it. Keith has a great blog article on this. It's in the documentation that you'll run through as well in the lab, which is I'm going to basically take and connect up Azure by uploading a certificate here and uploading a certificate to Azure and linking the two together so that they can securely communicate and that our app controller here can control that environment. So it's similar to what we did with the PowerShell console in that we're using a certificate to do that connection. Now I click on the virtual machines on the left once they're connected, and it can go out to Azure and list up the VMs. And here's, of course, the VM that we created earlier, and here's the other four VMs that I've created that are the VMs you'll create in the lab. So if I wanted to create another machine or delete a machine, I can do that from here. I could select this guy and remove him, shut him down, restart him, do a remote desktop. Another thing I can do up there is I can hit deploy. And so what we'll do here is we'll just do the same thing we did in the web-based GUI for Azure. We'll go and create a new server. So it has me choose from my Azure account. I could have multiple Azure accounts listed here. I just have my free trial listed.
And if you connect it to VMM, you could also have your private clouds in the same list as well, right?
Yes, my on-premises servers as well. And that's a huge differentiator. I don't know of any other environment that's doing on-premises as well as cloud that I can that easily move back and forth. It's not as easy as I'd like. It will be easier even in the future. But today, I can still, if I have run stuff in the Azure environment and I run it on-premises, I download the virtual machine, the VHD file, and I install it and run it in Hyper-V locally. If there's stuff here I want to put in the cloud, I take my servers here that I've virtualized on Hyper-V, and I just upload that VHD file and provision them inside Azure. So it's fantastic, that ability to be able to move those back and forth. And if I want to build something special for Azure, I can build it off the platform images already in Azure. Or if I have an enterprise standard platform image that I use, I can take that and upload that to Azure and start to provision off of my standard enterprise deployment. Mm-hmm. And anything in between that you want to build, you can build it in Hyper-V on your local Windows 8 desktop, in your Hyper-V server environment, and then upload that later. So it's great from that perspective.
So full VM portability back and forth.
Full VM portability. Mm-hmm. And that's a real thing that I don't see anybody from a public cloud have, is that VM portability. That, mm-hmm. That's a real killer feature to Azure.
Sure.
So now that I have selected my cloud, I'm going to select a deployment type here. I'm going to grab an image, and here are platform images. So I'm just going to take another Windows Server 2012 data center patched through March. I'll grab this image that's out there. And so it will base it off of that image. The next thing I have to do is I have to go and configure my cloud service. So what cloud service? I'm going to add it to a cloud service and create a new one. I'll just add it to the cloud service we just created. So I select OK on that. And what we see is these VMs are going to be now under the same cloud service. So they're actually going to be joined together behind a layer 7 switch. That way I can hit both of them by hitting one DNS address or one IP address, which is a real nice benefit of scaling out for Azure. We'll talk more about that later when we get to the network section. But now I have my virtual machine here. I give it a virtual machine name. I select the size, just as we did in the portal, a little bit of a different view here. But I'm going to just keep that as a small. I am not going to add it to availability set. I have to add it for the storage container up in Azure. And so I'll drop in the VHD section. Actually, have to have that container section in the same local environment that the server is going to run in. All right. I want to select a blob. What am I missing?
So on the data disks, you can create or add additional data disks as an option.
And then, here we go.
Yep, basically. So a lot of this looks like a lot of the same fields that we saw in the Azure portal being exposed through System Center App Controller. Is that right?
It is the exact same fields. And they're just in different spots, but we go and add it the exact same way with the username and the password.
Yep.
Say OK, and then I hit deploy once I have that environment all configured.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes and it deploys it just as we did previously in the portal. So we'll see that we have another server now popped up in the portal as well as in, you know, wherever we look for it. It's going to be in Azure.
Great.
And so it will be in this environment as well.
Great. Awesome. So we've seen a lot of great capabilities around managing our hybrid cloud environment, leveraging App Controller, leveraging PowerShell and the Azure module for free, for being able to manage and provision resources across on-premises as well as Azure up in the cloud. All these great features, though, certainly come at a cost. Whether we're running workloads on-premises or up in the cloud, there's always costs associated with it. So next, we want to talk a little bit about how we can estimate and plan our Azure-related cloud costs. Because as cool as Azure is, with the global scalability and the self-service and on-demand agility that it provides, if it costs too much, it's obviously not going to be a reasonable solution for a lot of environments. Well, luckily, it can actually cost a lot less. Out on the Azure portal, we've made it super easy to do planning around costs for Azure by giving you a cost calculator that you can use for playing different what-if games based on the virtual machines and networks and storage and other features of Azure that you're looking to take advantage of. And in fact, if I just switch over to our Azure portal, right from the main Azure portal, if you pull down the top banner on that portal, you'll see a pricing link. If I click on that pricing link, it'll take us right over to our price calculator page. And we've got that organized based on common collections of cloud resources, virtual machines and websites, mobile services and cloud services, storage and data management. Or if you are developing and planning for a more complex application scenario, you can go over to the full calculator where we give you options for every possible Azure service, every possible resource. You can specify your sizes, just like the sizes we saw within the management portal that Brian was showing us a little earlier. We can specify our sizes of VMs, the number of VMs that we wish to provision, and it'll show us the cost for running those virtual machines or storage options or networking options on a full month basis. So in this case, if I wanted to have a new Windows virtual machine spun up and running 7x24 around the clock on our Azure subscription, it costs about $55 a month to do that. Now, I don't know anybody in an on-premises world that can run any size VM for $55 a month. By the way, for Windows VMs, that $55 a month also includes the Windows Server Operating System license factored into it. So that license is built into the cost as well. When I talk to IT pros, I find that these types of cost comparisons between on-premises and cloud are sometimes a little challenging to make, because a lot of IT pros don't boil their costs down to a granular per VM per month type cost like our cloud platforms do. And there's been a ton of industry studies in this specific area. How much does it cost to run virtual machines and applications on premises? And what most of those studies have found when you average things together is that the average cost for running a kind of the same size VM, a single core with a couple gigs of memory in a highly available on-premises data center, it ends up being about $90 a month just for running the core VM without any additional data charges for data storage on premises, without any additional software costs, just for the hardware and operational costs of maintaining that VM inside of an enterprise data center. Well, here with Azure, we can we'll throw in the Windows Server costs and give you, for almost half the price of running on-premises, the same capabilities of running highly customizable virtual machines.
What if I want to only run that for, like, say, an hour?
That's a great question, yeah. And what we see is in a lot of on-demand scenarios, you know, dev and test, for instance, or environments where perhaps you're doing disaster recovery to the cloud and you only need to spin those VMs up when you're in disaster or crisis mode. Those types of on-demand scenarios are really attractive because we're not running those VMs 7x24. From a cost perspective, we only get charged for the cost of running those VMs when they're actively running and consuming resources in your Azure subscription. And you'll see right below that per month cost, we also break down the cost for running those Azure resources on a per hour basis. But actually, it's a little deceiving because in actuality, we do per minute billing of those Azure resources. So if you spin up a VM and do some testing, perhaps deploying some new patches to make sure that the patches apply correctly and work with the other applications you've configured inside those VMs on Azure, maybe that takes you 31 minutes to do. When you shut down that VM at the end of the month, you're billed for 31 minutes of compute charges on a per minute basis. That's a big differentiator from a cost perspective when you're using cloud platforms for on-demand scenarios, because most of the other cloud platforms out there bill you on a per hour basis. So they round up to the nearest hour. So if I use that same scenario, I spun up a VM for 31 minutes, did some testing, shut it back down. A lot of the other cloud platforms bill you for a full hour for using those same virtual machine resources. I'd encourage you, though, to spend some time on this pricing page because it allows you to play some really nice what-if games, not only just for virtual machines, but for other Azure services as well, for data. So if we had a particular storage amount, maybe we wanted to have a couple terabytes of storage that we add in. For network bandwidth, we can plan that. Maybe on a monthly basis, we have, oh, we'll say maybe about 100 gig of network bandwidth. Now, keep in mind, for network bandwidth, Azure only charges for egress bandwidth, traffic coming out of our Azure data centers. So in a lot of scenarios where you're doing maybe backup to the cloud, or disaster recovery where you're perhaps replicating at an application level some data up to the Azure cloud, all that inbound traffic is free. It's not being billed for. It's only when you're pulling data out across the network from one of our Azure data centers that there's network costs associated with it. And you can see the network costs, even for a couple hundred gig per month, pretty heavy duty network cost transfers, it's pennies. You know, it's very low cost from that standpoint. At the end of the day, after you've planned out all of the services that you wish to use, at the very bottom, it shows kind of the trued up cost of running those resources that you've selected on the pricing calculator page for an entire month at a time, 7x24. So for the resources I've selected with the storage, the virtual networking, and my virtual machines, it's less than $200 a month for all of that on a pay-as-you-go plan. But you also have the option of going to a 6 or a 12-month commitment and having that even lower by applying pre-commitment discounts, basically discounts for committing to that level of resources for a 6 or 12-month period of time. So it can be very cost-effective from an Azure standpoint to start thinking about leveraging the cloud to augment some of those scenarios that are running in your data center. In fact, when we think about some of those scenarios across cloud platforms, there's been some really interesting studies that have been recently done. This one's actually an independent study that was done by Cloud Spectator, an independent consulting organization, back in June of last year, June 2013. And what they did is they actually did a comparison test of 5 different infrastructure as a service cloud platforms: Azure, Amazon, Rackspace, HP's cloud, SoftLayer. They configured the same workloads running Ubuntu Linux across all of these clouds and then used the standard Unix benchmarking tool to stress test those environments on each cloud for 5 days straight. And what they found at the end of the day was really interesting feedback based on their report. And you can download the full report from Cloud Spectator's site directly. But what they found is that from a pure performance standpoint, Azure the Azure VM scored 3 times higher than Amazon EC2 did on average. And in comparison to Rackspace, they found that the value was 5 times higher on Azure because of our lower cost point for the resources that were running on the Azure platform. So really interesting studies. If you're looking at multiple public cloud platforms, I'd encourage you to look at this study. It does a nice job of breaking down the pros and cons of each of these cloud platforms. And that really brings us now to what are the common scenarios and patterns that we want to think about from an enterprise perspective when we're looking at where to start leveraging the cloud in our hybrid cloud strategy. Well, again, as we've worked with enterprise customers, we've found that there's 4 common cloud patterns that really make a lot of sense based on the economies of the cloud, the agility, the on-demand nature of cloud resources. Some of them we've talked about already throughout this first section. One of those patterns we call on and off. On and off is a pattern that lends itself towards a lot of common scenarios like on-demand dev test or cold, having a set of replicated cold powered off VMs that you can spin up for disaster recovery purposes or batch job workloads that might only need to run once a week, once a month, or once a quarter to do some batch job processing as part of a line of business processing cycle, for instance. Well, if your environment on premises is like a lot of the ones I've been in, chances are you're running these workloads, these on-demand workloads today in your on-premises environment, 7x24 around the clock, those VMs are spinning, even though they're really only doing work periodically during different points in time. You know, on-demand dev and test might only be used during the business day by your development teams or your IT teams that are doing testing. Disaster recovery is only going to be used when you have a disaster and you need to spin those VMs up. Batch jobs, they're only running on whatever frequency you need those batch jobs to be processing at. So running those up in the cloud goes back to really the point that Brian made a little earlier about not having to run these workloads 7x24, running them when you need them, spinning them down when you don't, perhaps putting some PowerShell automation around the startup and shutdown of those resources so that they're only running when they need to be running. And you're only getting charged for those resources then when you really need them. Another common cloud pattern is growing fast. And I think storage definitely falls into this category. Again, if your environment is like a lot of the ones that I've been in, storage is ever increasing. Year over year, it seems like your users can't get enough storage for storing their current data and also perhaps their less frequently accessed data on the network. Well, by leveraging Azure's storage platform as an extension of your on-premises storage platform, you can substantially reduce your cost per terabyte of usable storage. Or you might think about cloud storage as a way of doing off-site backups more efficiently. So in our storage section coming up after the break, we'll talk more about how to leverage Azure storage to implement some of those scenarios. Another pattern relates to unpredictable demand. So unpredictable demand where you may suddenly get hit with a high volume of requests that you weren't anticipating, kind of an unpredictable increased load. We recently saw this out there with, you know, some of the big government websites like healthcare.gov and whatnot, where they got many more people hitting them than they were originally anticipating. In a cloud environment, that kind of unpredictable demand is easily addressed in the cloud by allowing you to scale up and scale down your resources to meet those needs, those unpredictable demand needs, when they're occurring. Instead of having to build out a whole new data center infrastructure or try to plan for the potential worst case scenario of utilization up front. And then the last area is predictable bursting. So predictable bursting makes sense in a lot of different industries, retail, healthcare, hospitality, where you have throughout the quarter or throughout the year, different expected increases in utilization, you know, in the retail industry as we move towards a major holiday, a lot of the retailers are expecting, hopefully, to see an onslaught of additional traffic coming into their e-commerce sites, for instance. Or in the hospitality industry, as major conference events occur, you'd expect to have higher demands on those conference websites, those marketing websites, for instance. With Azure, you can schedule that kind of traffic, that kind of load to take place based on what you're projecting for the increased utilization needs. So you can have, you know, when you're expecting to have a heavier load, you can have more VMs spun up and have your request load balanced across them. When you don't have as much of a load, you can spin down those VMs into an idle state, not get charged for them, have them kind of sitting off to the side, ready to be spun up again at a later point in time. In the virtual machine section that we cover tomorrow, we'll actually be talking about these scenarios and show you how to implement them in more detail. So when you're thinking about leveraging the cloud as an extension of your data center, some great patterns and scenarios to use as starting point considerations. So in our first module together, we've looked at Azure as a cloud platform. We've talked about the advantages that it provides from a global scale standpoint. We've looked at the ability, Brian showed us how we can easily spin up new resources on demand through the Azure portal, through PowerShell, through System Center App Controller. We'll definitely be deep diving into storage, virtual networking, and virtual machines with modules later today and tomorrow in more detail to get into the nuts and bolts of provisioning those resources. And we also finished up looking at some common patterns and scenarios that make sense to consider as your initial entry point into leveraging the Azure Cloud Platform as an extension of your on-premises data center from a cost and workload perspective. So we're going to take a quick break here for about 10 minutes or so. When we come back, we're going to jump into storage and virtual networking, and we'll deep dive into those areas and look at how we can specifically gain some value out of those areas of Azure as part of our hybrid cloud. So we'll see you back here in 10 minutes.